In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Monday, December 20th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And as I talked about in hour number one of the program, we're almost out of 2010. In-depth with Francis Rose in particular is counting down. We've got, after today, three more new shows for 2010 for you, and that means a lot of people are thinking about 2011. One of the people who is thinking about 2011 is Paul Henry, a security analyst for Lumention. And, Paul, you have a lot of insight in these predictions about things that will affect the federal government. It's great to have you on the show to talk about what you're seeing in your crystal ball for next year.
Glad to be here, and 2011 is going to be another fun year, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that, especially as we cover some of the things that you have. You've got seven predictions here. I'm going to post them later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so folks can look them over anytime they want. Let's do them countdown style because that's the kind of guy I am. Number seven, Medicare fraud via ID theft will see explosive growth, and that kind of flies in the face of what the administration's tried to work on when it comes to improper payments.
I hear you. Well, the bottom line is that there's been a lot of confusion brought about by healthcare reform in general. And bad guys are simply going to be taking advantage of that confusion. You know, the number one thing that we're seeing right now is that, you know, cyber criminals, specifically organized crime, have discovered that they can garner enough information off of the internet, you know, just personal identity theft, to actually create fraudulent billing to Medicare. So, you know, you might get a snail mail, as they call it, from Medicare, just asking you questions about that hip replacement that, they handle the billing for that you never had. You know, that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. You know, it drills all the way down to the healthcare reform confusion, also moving people to look at buying prescription drugs, et cetera, online. And reports are that a majority of the drugs that are being bought online aren't exactly what people think they are.
Yeah, a lot of those, a lot of the issues with those surround the fact that they're just fake drugs that may not even have the parts of them that are supposed to heal you in what you're getting through the mail.
Exactly. More importantly, is they can contain other substances that could really harm you.
All right. Prediction number six on your list is one that I've been particularly interested in because VoIP has the potential to save agencies a lot of money at times, at a time when they really need to save money. But I'm not sure that we've thought out the security element of that, and that seems to be involved with what you're saying here. VoIP will be used as a covert channel in data breaches.
Yeah, the bottom line on it is that, you know, the CFOs particularly look at the 80% savings they're going to have on their toll charges when they move them off of, standard PSTN to across the internet with VoIP, and they rarely, if ever, really address the security issues. Now, the primary concern there is businesses in general, because of the regulatory concerns, have spent thousands, well, I should say hundreds of thousands of dollars on data leakage protection products that unfortunately never look at the RTP communications channel associated with VoIP. So here we have this, you know, and sometimes encrypted, oftentimes simply ignored channel that blows right through the firewall that's never inspected. Mm. It's the perfect opportunity for the bad guys to move data into or out of your network completely undetected.
You write in your little synopsis of this that it would requires a major breach with seven-figure losses publicly reported in order to get the attention of the enterprises to finally take action. That doesn't just apply to VoIP sometimes, it seems like. That applies to all kinds of security breaches.
Well, it's across the board. I mean, right now we're seeing, according to Newsweek, $26 million a month in VoIP minutes being stolen because people didn't properly secure the servers, particularly the SIP server associated with VoIP. But the press doesn't report on that. The numbers aren't big enough for the individual instances.
It's got to be something really sexy that the media takes notice of to get people to think about this as an issue.
Well, exactly. That's like if we look at the big breaches of the past couple of years, you know, with TJX, everybody talked about the Wi-Fi angle because Wi-Fi is sexy when in reality that breach started out with somebody plugging a malware USB stick into an employment kiosk within a store and it was simply unprotected.
Mm-hmm. Your prediction number five, Paul, is mobile devices will come under greater attack. And with all due respect, this is one that I saw coming.
There you go, man. It doesn't take much to see this one coming. You know, a lot of people fail to realize that it's not just bad software. It really is popularity of a device that, you know, causes the focus for the bad guys on it. And I'm just seeing so many mobile devices out there, especially when you look at things like the iPad. Now, speaking about the iPad, I'm seeing new applications such as one that would allow you to fully manage your entire virtual environment from an iPad. Yet we're talking about the same device where if you simply go out to a website that's got a malicious PDF file on it and you view it, that bad guy that built that site now has complete control of your iPad, so he becomes the guest administrator for your entire virtual environment.
Now, one of the things that I've talked about with some cyber professionals both in and out of government is the idea that for cost efficiency purposes, moving forward, the idea is that some people are thinking about is securing the data rather than securing the devices. But it sounds like that strategy, especially in the mobile domain, might not be what you're advising.
No, you really need to also stay in tight control of access in general. Again, if you're running a VPN, let's say, from that mobile device back into the corporate infrastructure, you're literally blowing a hole through the firewall that's encrypted, and you really can't inspect it to see what data is really going where.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can assume control of that mobile device, I'm simply going to surf that encrypted tunnel right into the back of your network, and you're never going to see it coming.
You write, what better way to enter an environment than to simply surf in on the VPN tunnel behind the firewall from an unprotected mobile device. One of the things that we took away from OPM Director John Barry's decree about telework and the changes in what they're going to do as far as closing government and calling it rather than unscheduled leave, it's unscheduled leave and or unscheduled telework. The emphasis on telework is great, and the agencies are confident that their VPNs are secure. And you're just adding a little bit of fuel to the fire here with this reminder that not everybody's devices that are connected to those VPNs might be as secure as they should be.
Well, that's the point. I mean, looking at VPN just generally here, you know, using a VPN is kind of like moving money between two barnyards in an armored car. You know, the armored car is secure from a confidentiality standpoint. When you get back to that barnyard, there is no security.
Mm-hmm. All right, prediction number four from Paul Henry, security analyst for Lumentum. WikiLeaks will not go away. Now, when you're thinking about this, are you thinking about the Julian Assange WikiLeaks organization or just the concept that information that we thought or, and that agencies thought was secure and safe will no longer be secure and safe?
Well, it's the entire concept. I mean, when WikiLeaks first came out a number of years ago, I raised an alarm that this was going to be a changing event, we'll say. The problem is that, you know, right now it's primarily focused on governments. I guarantee you it's going to focus on large enterprise next. You know, they're going to go out there to try to embarrass the Bank of Americas and the Citibanks of the world by publishing internal memos, as well as potentially, you know, publishing recorded VoIP calls mm-hmm. within those organizations.
What is the implication for any kind of organization, but especially a government agency or a federal contractor, for dealing with internal risks? It seems that until WikiLeaks broke, there was almost pretty much lip service was the only kind of attention that was paid to internal risks. Yes, we're aware they can happen and so on. The intelligence community obviously is different. They've been aware of the potential of internal risks for a long time. But the Department of X may not have really thought that they had anything that somebody internally would want to publicize or leak in this manner. And it seems like that's just now starting. What kind of strategies are successful organizations using in dealing with internal risks?
You know, the primary methodology is to really get control of your endpoints before endpoints get control of you. You know, that means locking down your USB ports, having control of what data can be copied over to something like a USB. And I'm using USB as an example. We also have to consider writable CDs and all of that fun stuff. But again, the bottom line is you've got to be able to control specifically what can be written where. You have to control it in such a manner that it's forcibly encrypted before it's written to a device, and it can only be read on specific machines using certificates, et cetera.
Paul Henry is a security analyst for Lumentum, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM as part of my Predictions for 2011 series. Later on in the hour, you'll hear from Bob Otto, former CIO and CFO at the U.S. Postal Service, now with Agilex, with his predictions for 2011. A couple of more from Paul Henry when we return on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, Lisa, how's it going?
Good, thanks. Just getting ready for the holidays.
Same here. You headed out of town?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, do you worry about the house?
No, not since we got home monitoring from Ackerman Security Systems.
Ackerman?
That's right. Not only is it one of the largest security companies in the country with more than 40 years' experience, but get this, when you switch to Ackerman, you pay just $18.95 a month.
$18.95. What's the catch?
No catch. There's also no cost to switch, and you can use your existing equipment. With Ackerman, we know the house is safe, even if the neighborhood is cleared out for the holidays.
Whether you want a new system with the latest technology or you want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 1-888-999-1070. That's 1-888-999-1070. Or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Join the more than 180,000 people who enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. And as an added bonus for federal employees, when you make the switch, the first 4 months of your home monitoring service are free.
Looking for high-flying excitement for your group in the heart of the nation's capital? Easily accessible by metro or by car, get the thrill of college hoops right here in Foggy Bottom. Your organization can enjoy a special discounted group rate and watch the Colonials in their quest for the Atlantic 10 Championship. For rates, dates, and more information, visit www.gwsports.com or call 202-994-6050. That's 202-994-6050.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? And how are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
Weight training after breast cancer. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Women who get breast cancer treatment may develop possibly painful swelling in the arm or side affected by treatment, such as removal of lymph nodes near the breast with cancer. These nodes ordinarily hold and drain fluid, and the fluid can then back up. But a study finds that a program of slow but increasing weight training can cut the risk of the condition, which is called lymphedema. At the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, Dr. Catherine Schmitz looked at data on 154 women. Half of the women lifted weights twice a week.
Women who did the weight training were less likely to have increases in arm swelling than women who did not do the weight training.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. What are the big management challenges facing your agency? Well, for the IRS, the big challenge for years has been its modernization effort. For the year ahead, it's security. We'll find out what's changed. And we'll continue looking at the big stories of 2010 with former EPA CIO Molly O'Neill and Tom Trabucco talking about your TSP this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Predictions for 2011 from Paul Henry, security analyst for Lumentum, and he's got seven of them. We've covered the bottom four on the list, and only the three best to go. You can find the whole list at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Paul, your prediction number three, security will finally arrive for virtualization. What's been the security challenge for virtualization up till now? This is something that agencies across government are working on.
Well, actually, it's been pretty strange. It almost seems that security vendors were regarding virtualization as nothing more than a fad, and they never really committed the resources to developing the security products to help lock it down. Now, what I'm referring to there specifically is in virtualization, you have a lot of internal intra-VM traffic. Unfortunately, our traditional security products like firewalls can't look at that traffic, neither can intrusion detection systems, so it's a real blind spot for us.
You're right. In 2011, look for security vendors that had been sitting on the sidelines to recognize that virtualization's here to stay, jump in the game, and finally write software that can interface to the vSafe API and provide meaningful policies on otherwise unseen traffic. What's driven that awareness of vendors that virtualization isn't going to go away? What has been the holdup in the past?
Well, I think it's been the adoption rates. I really think that it's taken off here. You know, in a down economy, everybody's looking at how they can save some money. And virtualization absolutely can help you consolidate your servers, et cetera, and can produce a significant savings. However, with that being said, I really find it interesting that Gartner themselves had noted that by 2012, 60% of the deployed virtual machines will actually be less secure than their original bare metal counterparts.
And that is enough to make a CIO sweat and stay up at night, no doubt. Prediction number two on your list is social media goes deeper, increasing threats. The social media going deeper is good news for government because it's easier and cheaper to communicate on a two-way basis with the people that you're serving, whoever it is that is the recipient of the mission meeting that you're trying to accomplish. But the bad news is just about anybody can participate, and so, as you say, it increases the threats.
Yeah, absolutely. The bottom line there is we're putting way too much personal information up on social media sites, and that information is being harvested by cyber criminals, and it's used in spear phishing attacks, et cetera, to make it more personable, we'll say. Makes it much more likely that you're going to click on that link that leads you to a malware-laden website, et cetera. What's concerning me there is we have some of these companies out there, I don't want to get into naming names here, but they're really expanding their role. They're trying to get out of just having personal information to having, you know, things hosted such as your resume, et cetera. You know, these companies have already proven that they can't be trusted to safeguard our personal information, yet we seem to be throwing more of it at them.
Mm-hmm. You write, by expanding the information we're placing on social websites, we're making the job of social engineering easier for the bad guys. People are chilled sometimes when, just people that I meet in social settings and so on, when I talk about the information that's available about them, not in particular, but about individuals in general, online, and yet I go and friend that person on a site like Facebook, and a lot of the same information that they were surprised people are able to find out about them on the internet, they put right there for just about anybody to see.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That is number two, your prediction about social media. Your number one prediction for 2011, Paul, is that state-sponsored cybercrime will become a regular occurrence. And you're right, it all started with China and the Google hacks and reared its head again with Stuxnet. It's no longer your disgruntled employee or even the opportunistic hacker simply taking advantage of a chink in your armor that you need to worry about. This is big money stuff, big stakes now, and the trend that I find interesting here, and I'm curious your thoughts about this, is that people are starting to think about this and write about this and strategize about this as cyber war rather than cyber crime.
You know, I hear you there. As soon as you bring in state sponsoring of it, it truly does become borderline cyber war, we'll say. I mean, the bottom line here is back in 2009, we had Ghostnet, where reportedly the Chinese government had hacked a number of embassies overseas, et cetera, et cetera. That was a major news item. People were oohing and aahing over it, we'll say. We saw less of a reaction when we heard about the Google hack in 2010 with China. And again, it seems less of an event with Stuxnet. It really is becoming too much of a regular occurrence. Now, when you're trying to protect the network, you've got constraints. You've got personnel you're limited to. You've got a tightly constrained budget in this economy. And you're really up against a foe today that has unlimited resources. I mean, hey, they print the money. You know what I mean?
Exactly. There is a thread that runs through all of these predictions that you're seeing for 2011, and in my view. And the thread that jumped out at me is just, it's situational awareness. Know what's going on around you. Know what's going on your network at all times. And that's pretty challenging for the executives that are making the decisions about how these networks are operated. What advice would you have for them in general as they try to avoid making sure that some of these predictions don't happen to them?
Well, we really have to be careful there. I mean, the things that we've done in the past, such as signature-based AV, IDS, and IPS, they simply are not designed to, deter today's more determined state-sponsored hacker. Again, they're not even a speed bump, we'll say, in the road into your network. They're just blowing right through those defenses. People really need to take a hard look at the failings of the past and move on to newer technologies that aren't as susceptible to failure as the traditional stuff that we've been using for the last decade.
Paul, thanks for sharing these predictions with me. Thanks for your insight. Excellent to have you on. And the problem with doing a good presentation like this on my show is that I'm going to bug you to come back and talk to me some more.
Not a problem. Be happy to come back.